This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
You've heard that a few times. President Franklin D. Roosevelt addressing the nation on December 8, 1941, a day after Japan's surprise attack on the island of Oahu became the beginning of what would be nearly 4 years of war for the U.S. This week marks the 77th anniversary of that day of infamy and the first year in recent memory in which no USS Arizona survivors were on hand at the visitor center in Pearl Harbor to mark the occasion. It's only the second year that Herb Weatherwax wasn't with us anymore to honor those who died that day. Uncle Herbie, as he became known in Hawaii, was a popular Pearl Harbor survivor there because of his frequent appearances at the memorial over many decades. You can still find his book in the gift shop there as well. Weatherwax passed away in 2016, 5 days after attending the 75th anniversary commemoration. In 1941, he was in the Army, assigned to Schofield Barracks on Oahu.
But 10 days before that attack, the Army had been alerted to get out to our defensive position, and that's what we did. We got onto that, and that meant that we had to get prepared for an invasion by sea. And I was in a communication section, and we laid all the telephone lines to get everything all prepared, and we thought that we were all set, but we didn't know what for. We didn't know that something was going to happen at Pearl Harbor or not, but our orders were to get prepared. And so we did that. I was let out on a weekend pass on that weekend. I was at home. Early that morning, I heard a very loud explosion. And it was a beautiful day. And I looked in the direction of the sound, and that was over Pearl Harbor. And the sky was just black with smoke in that area. And then I turned the radio on. They announced over the radio that all military personnel report to your station immediately. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor. Immediately I got a ride down to the bus stop in Honolulu. And there we got on the bus. And then as we were heading for Schofield Barracks, we had to pass by Pearl Harbor. And as soon as I entered that area there, I looked out and I was shocked. I had a shock of my life. The Arizona was already on fire, and it was a terrible sight. All the ships in the back of the Arizona was ablaze. And as I say, the sky, that area was just black with smoke. And I saw the Oklahoma had already been torpedoed. She killed over. I could see the hull. And I could see little objects scrambling on the hull of the ship, which was the men that escaped. And our bus kept on going, headed on. And we passed by Wheelerfield, which is just next to Schofield Barracks. And there I saw all our airplanes that had been parked in the runway, all ablaze. The hangars were ablaze. And then I saw the one lone plane circling around Wheelerfield. And that's the only plane I can remember out of the 350 plane that was sent out to attack Pearl Harbor. And we got together at Schofield Barracks, and we had to travel all around the island in order to our position, which was located where the naval air base was, Kaneohe Naval Air Base. And when I approached that Kaneohe Naval Air Base, I was shocked again to see that base ablaze, and all the airplanes, the seaplanes were all ablaze. And then we were all excited because we were waiting for the Japanese to follow up with an invasion, which is what we expected. So that evening, we were all keyed up, and we were concerned about but saboteurs at the time. But then the next day came about and there was no invasion. Then later on, about 2 days afterwards, we found out that they had turned around, a Japanese convoy had turned around and headed back to Japan. But the damage that was done was so bad.
Indeed, and one man who saw the damage from a unique view is Uncle Herbie's longtime friend from their shared appearances at the USS Arizona Memorial. Delton Wally Walling was 180 feet above the surface in an observation tower that morning.
Now it's 7:56, and we're standing there, and here's a beautiful day. And all at once, overhead, we've got planes, high planes, low planes, all coming in on us. Oh, must be a big maneuver today. Those orange balls up there is not ringing the bell yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ringing the bell even when we see those black objects dropping out of those planes.
It hasn't hit you yet that this is enemy.
That isn't it. Mm-hmm. And when the bomb went off on Fort Allen and all the planes are exploding everywhere, we know we're in war. I'm froze to the rail because the first thing that happened just before the plane started dropping was Hickam Field is blowing up. It's right behind me. I'm looking, maybe a couple minutes or something before the raid started right over Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So Hickam Field is destroyed immediately. Now I'm froze to that rail because I have joined the greatest Navy of all times. And here it is being blown up in my face in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm devastated. Because if they can do that in 10 minutes, what else is coming?
Right.
And scuttlebutt is everywhere. They've already landed on the other side, and oh man, you don't know what to believe. The Arizona never blew up till 8:06. It's the last ship that blew up. Because your California sunk. Oklahoma's rolled over, the Utah's rolled over,
mm-hmm.
and the West Virginia's got hit by at least 7 torpedoes. It's a mess. It went straight down.
And you're seeing each one of these?
I'm seeing it after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot possibly see it because you're looking there, a bomb went off, one's already gone there. You're looking and seeing after the fact. The Shaw being on dry dock,
right.
Up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it was hit, and the magazine blew it apart. Now, that concussion, because they're in the air, just comes high. So we did feel the concussion from where we were at on the tower from the Shaw.
With thousands and thousands of military personnel on Oahu that day, there are so many different vantage points. And we get another one from a Kansas native who had actually traveled to Oahu aboard the USS Arizona. Eugene Leonard's assignment was working on planes at Eva Field, a Marine Corps air base west of Pearl Harbor. Did you have any idea before December 7th, was there any concern that the Japanese might attack?
None at all. Absolutely surprised.
Tell me about that Sunday morning. What's the first thing you remember?
I remember the airplanes flying about, 8-10 miles away. Coming in, they looked different, but they was tiny. You know, that's quite a ways away. And I could see torpedoes hanging halfway below the airplane. The nose would be pointed down from the airplane. That's what they used to sink the different ships.
So when you first saw the airplanes, did you think?
We discussed it. You know, all the guys, we stand colored, you know, your mom.
Yeah.
But, hey, what's going on? Hey, they look different. And as soon as that's over, of course, I had to go to my guard station. And when we went to the guard station, when we was attacked for this base, see, this is the first airplane come over our way, attacked the truck that I was in.
When you first saw those planes, did you think they were American planes?
Oh, no. I could see that red thing.
Even when they were far away, though, I mean, when you saw them on the horizon.
I didn't know what they was when they were far away. We didn't know what there was.
So did it start to trigger maybe something's wrong here?
No, I really didn't know something was wrong at all until we got in the ring and that plane come after us. Then I knew something was wrong. We knew right then. But it's already too late. We didn't have anything to do.
So you and another guard are driving a truck. How big a truck?
Just a pickup with a flatbed.
So you don't have much protection?
No protection whatsoever.
And the very first plane that comes in that's firing...
At that truck.
And that's where they came from, that direction. So they got to Eva Field before they got to Battleship Row, right?
No, they broke off from the battles. They was coming in from the north side of the island and across. And we could see them going across to Pearl Harbor. And you see, they just broke off. They had to get our airplanes too, you know.
Yeah.
And because they broke off. See, there was Schofield Barracks and Wheeler Armor Air, all them. They was attacking them all at the same time.
And you guys at your field had, what, about 40 or 50 airplanes?
Well, there was three squadrons, and we only had about eight in our squadron. And then there's dive bombing, a fighter squadron, and another a scout bomber squadron.
And so some of those planes are planes that, had you guys been able to get them in the air, could have fought with the Japanese planes and inhibited the damage.
The rear gunners and all that would be after them, and the fighter planes and everything.
But they were able to destroy them all right there on the ground.
They destroyed them on the ground. No ammunition anywhere.
And they almost destroyed you. So your truck, the Japanese plane is firing machine gun bullets right at you. You got out of the truck. And
I got out of it, so did the other guy.
And you had an idea of where a safe place to go would be. Tell me what that was.
Well, that was the big building where the morning mask was, where the holes was in the ground.
So this Eva Field had been used in World War One with dirigibles, inflatable airships.
Right.
And so they had these big hangars, and there were holes ground in the...
No big hangars. There was no hangars whatsoever.
But so what was the purpose of this building you were hiding in?
Well, it's just machinery to cables up and down for the tower.
But you knew that in that building, as kind of a leftover of the old technology, there were these big holes
That's
in the ground.
Right. There's just holes in the ground.
How big around were they?
Oh, it wasn't round. It was long, probably that wide.
4 or 5 feet?
Maybe, 4 feet, 5 feet long.
So you and the other guy run in there and jump in those holes?
He didn't follow me. No. I just went for the, I don't know where he went.
So you just knew that's a safe place to go?
I was trying to get away from the bullets is all I knew.
So you hopped down in this hole. Was there anything else in that hole?
No.
Nothing crawling on you?
Well, like I say, scorpions was all over the place, and was and spiders and all that. So that's about all that's around.
So you preferred a bug bite to a Japanese bullet?
I knew the holes were there. See, I was second in rank. The number one sergeant in rank was killed probably 75 feet from where I was at. He got out there, grabbed a fire extinguisher where the airplanes was, and he got shot.
Were you guys pretty defenseless at that point?
We was defenseless.
You didn't have anti-aircraft guns or anything like that?
We didn't have anything, no ammunition or anything.
So the best thing you could have done is what you did, because there was nothing you were going to do to the Japanese. You just had to make sure you survived. What was it like to be in that hole, and what were you hearing? What was happening around you?
All I heard was the rattle of the building of the machine gun fire hitting it. I didn't know whatever. I just ducked down all I could in that to dodge everything. I happened to know that was there because it was right close to my work area, see. The airplanes that I worked on was right outside of that, right close to where I was at. But I just ducked down in the hole, see, because I happened to know they was there.
How long you think you were in the hole?
5, 10 minutes, I don't know. I have no idea. I was ducked down and trying to, you know, work as much safety. And as soon as that building stopped rattling, I run to the guardhouse to get my rifle. And no ammunition, of course. And the truck took us. It come back to the guardhouse and took us to the ammunition sheds. And I got in there with a .45, broke the lock. And we loaded ammunition as fast as we could. There was in a cloth deal that full of 30-06 ammunition, and we was just that ammunition to people. Everyone was grabbing rifles and everything else, and of course then we got machine gun ammunition and all that. But hey, the machine guns, the stands all broke up. We armed ourselves just as fast as we could of every way we could, because we figured they was coming in for a landing, which they did not do.
Yeah, so you guys really weren't prepared for that initial attack, and then after that you prepared and nothing else happened.
We prepared for an attack by land troops, because that's the only thing we could do.
And the reason I asked you how long you were in the hole, and you said 5 or 10 minutes, something tells me it felt like a lot longer than that.
I don't know, because it's not very long. It doesn't take very long to set the airplanes on fire. They're just sitting on the ground everywhere, lined up. Mm-hmm. And, hey, they could come down hitting them airplanes and fire. They got them on fire so fast you can't believe it, because it's all lined up.
What was going through your mind as you were in that hole?
I don't have any idea. It was just that I was trying to save myself. I didn't know what was going on except that I was being shot at.
When the building stopped rattling and you came out of there, what did you see? What was the scene around you?
Airplanes on fire. Just piles of planes are burning. All that fuel had to be burnt. See, it's burning everywhere.
So many people saw so many things burning that day on Oahu, but the images most of us associate with that day of infamy are those that showed the battleships burning. When we come back, two more Pearl Harbor stories from men whose ships went under that day. One from the USS Oklahoma, one from the USS Arizona. Find photos and links to all of these full-length interviews at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.